So that was quite valuable. Between the consideration and adoption, I'd say that's the most difficult time to organize on the national coalition, because the enthusiasm was like, oh, the U.S. is going to have to face the global community. It's 3 hours. And then afterwards, everybody's like, oh, we're exhausted. We've been working for so many months, and oh, good. And we're like, no, everyone, you still have more work to do. So we had to focus on putting pressure for the U.S. to really accept those recommendations, and more importantly, to try to get them to do some of the low-hanging fruit, to do something, because every government loves to show up at the actual consideration, at the adoption, going, we've adopted this, we just turned in our CEDAW report, we're doing everything, it's great to be here, to kind of make the questions a little bit softer from the other governments. So we pushed for the U.S. to accept all of the recommendations. We did have one success. The U.S. was the only country at that time to not accept the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. We thought we could get them at the November review, but then on December 16th, Obama formally recognized it at the White House with a meeting with tribal and national chiefs. So that was important, which of course they then brought up at the adoption. Our challenge at the adoption was getting those seats, because as Roland was telling you the funny stories, and I'm sure Eve shared them as well, there were only 10 seats. Everyone wanted to give that speech. The morning of, you had 20 Iranian gongos in line since 5 a.m. saying, we're going to give every speech. We did use the bicycle system. I did borrow a bicycle and drove past all of them quite efficiently. But, fortunately, that doesn't exist anymore, so I think that'll be good. We just have to be quick on the keyboard to be able to get those in. The adoption was important. We did then have results the week after. Amnesty International had its annual general membership meeting in San Francisco. Michael Posner, who was the undersecretary, actually gave speeches defining a philosophy and a framework for economic, social, and cultural rights in America. Would have never happened without the UPR. They do say they can't ratify it because, as you saw from our government shutdown, there's some people who do anything. You have to have 67 votes in the Senate, and you just can't get 67 votes on that. But they were moving forward with economic, social, and cultural rights like never before, with meetings at State Department, but also in Department of Justice as well. And implementation, I think that's where the real challenge is. I would say weaknesses about what we did is the U.S. would call meetings very quickly and just kind of bring the Washington NGOs. So even though they did really good leading up to it, afterwards they kind of went back to business as usual. It's easier just to bring the groups that are in Washington and not consult like they had done before. So that's been a challenge. They didn't do the tour to follow up to the people that listened and that spoke to them. They just did working groups on each issue. That's good for the specialists. Now the person who does the housing coalition rights has regular meetings on housing as a human right, so it's very valuable. But we did lose a little bit of that grassroots support that, as we're looking at the second review in 2015, I think we'll have to apologize to grassroots. We'll have to do a lot more. We'll have to reach out. And we didn't keep the momentum from one time to the other. We did okay with the midterm review after 2 years. We did a giant meeting. We prepared the information for UPR Info. But it's hard to keep everyone involved and excited every 4.5 years, so I think those are some of the challenges we'll have to look at. But all in all, it was very valuable to us to get more attractive publicity, to attract more interest from people who never got involved or saw their issue as a human rights issue. They'd be like, we're here on women's points, and I'm like, it's a human rights issue. Really? Yes, I think there's a global movement about it. You should engage. So it was really valuable for us to do that, and it was really good the way we were able to work with universities, communities, and get everyone to take more of a responsibility. That never did exist. Before, everyone looked out for their own NGO, their own issue, and didn't cooperate. So it was a very collaborative and cooperative process. It allowed us to be more proactive and participatory than ever before, but we still have a lot of work to do, and there's a lot that has to be done. But thank you for listening for us to share a little bit about how NGOs at a national level participate in the five phases of the UPR, and we'll yield to questions.